Hey listeners, before I get into this episode, I have a quick ask to make. I started this podcast as a research project on how to be a top individual contributor in the product design space. My goal for the show was to learn what it takes to be an individual contributor that is doing amazing, impactful work that they love doing day in and day out and getting paid top dollar while they do it. Becoming that type of individual contributor is the ultimate job security. With close to 100 hours of interview recordings, this has naturally led to the creation of the short-form video articles that synthesize my learnings into 10-minute listens of actionable content. You might recognize these as my morning walk episodes or the hashtag shorts episodes. To my surprise, those episodes have been very well received and listeners have enjoyed the synthesis of what I've learned. This has led to the next chapter of my research project, which is beginning to synthesize what I've learned into a new newsletter called Thinking Out Loud About Design that you can subscribe to right now for free. Thinking Out Loud About Design is an email newsletter and podcast that basically contains all my synthesis for my long-form interviews. It's pure distilled learnings that you can apply to your career immediately. This content is for you if you are a couple years into your career and you're trying to make that move from mid-level to senior designer and senior designer to staff designer. I mainly focus on becoming high-performing individual contributors in the product design industry. A free subscription gives you full access to the newsletter, podcast episodes, and website. You won't have to worry about missing anything because every new edition of the newsletter goes directly into your inbox. So my ask is this. If you have gotten any value out of the way of product design, or if it's helped you in any way or someone you know, please subscribe to Thinking Out Loud About Design and get the distilled learnings on being a staff-level individual contributor. You can find a link to the newsletter in the show notes of every episode of this podcast and on my LinkedIn page. Just look up Caden Damiano. Thanks again for listening and supporting the way of product design. I wouldn't be doing this if you guys weren't listening. Now, on to the show. Welcome to the Way of Product Design. I'm your host, Caden Damiano. This podcast has one mission: help product designers generate massive value for their clients, their companies, and themselves so they can do the work they enjoy the most. We know design is valuable, but how can you unlock the true value of design in your work? To help with this, I interview top performers in design, product management, and engineering so you can understand what's valuable to your stakeholders, your bosses, and your customers. So enjoy this episode. Thanks for listening. Hey, listeners, I was introduced to this awesome individual who is currently the director of operations at the awesome and prolific agency Impeccable, based in San Francisco, but it's remote. So actually, it's very location ambiguous now. I want to introduce you to Janet Lee. She has been at Impeccable for almost, if you like, do over 6 years. If you want to do a hard roundup, you're coming up on 7, 4 months, that's what LinkedIn says. But yeah, she's an awesome coach. I had a coaching session or two with her to just talk about my recent gig move. And she has a lot to offer when it comes to design management and operations, when it comes to running a design-led business. Janet, could you introduce yourself to the listener and just tell us your story of like how you got to where you're at today?
Yeah, sure. So hi, everyone. I'm Janet. As Caden mentioned, a lot of my career has been grown over my time at Impeccable. Before that, I actually was working more in graphic design. So I was actually working at my father's company. Fun fact about me, I come from a family of entrepreneurs. So my siblings and I have all kind of gone through the training grounds at my dad's company. So that's where, as I reflect now on my career, I see the beginnings of why I'm in the role I am today, where although I started as a graphic designer at my dad's company, very quickly my role evolved to where I had to sit between departments to try to coordinate other departments too and learn a lot more on the business side of what does it mean to run a business? What are all the different gears involved with doing those things? What are other kind of things that business owners need to worry about? So from a very early age, I was able to gain a little bit more empathy for business owners. After that, when I moved to Impeccable, I actually started as an intern, and I do think that the experience of my father's company before really allowed me to have a lot more empathy for Peck as a business owner. At the time, we were a very small agency. When I was there, there was one other designer. We actually, Impeccable, didn't even have a private office at the co-working space that we were in. And I was actually just sitting in the common space of the co-working space, just working alongside Peck and things like that. So over the years, obviously, my role has shifted quite a lot. And really, I feel like, again, reflecting back to the early days of my career, it makes sense that now I'm in a similar position, sitting between departments, helping to guide the direction of our company while being very empathetic to what our team needs, again, which are things that designers naturally do in your design practice. So that's a little bit about my story.
Yeah, so you've the IC work behind and have become an operator. You're almost, and from what Peck told me, you're also over engineering resources as well, right?
Yeah.
So you're basically like a director when it comes to an agency, right? So you're like a director of engineering. You're probably like over like project management and design. Like that's a lot of different stuff.
It is. And that was a shift that started just earlier this year. Yeah. Before, my path was just overseeing our design team. And initially I started as an individual contributor. So as I mentioned, I did start as an intern. I learned a lot from Peck and other designers at the time. And then as our team grew, then it just slowly kind of started to play more of a lead role in projects. And then eventually, when we got bigger than that and created more organization for our design team, then I started to manage our design team and then really start to think less about individual projects and more about what does our design organization look like and where should it go? I do this shout out all the time, but where I learned the most over the last couple of years was when after I attended a Design X conference. It was a design leadership conference where I learned a lot about what you needed to do to grow your team, including design operations. And so I definitely recommend people to go to that conference. And then also I learned a lot from reading other books around design organization. Peter Merholt's Org Design for Design Orgs was a really great thing. So yeah, absolutely. My role has shifted. And after that, our team grew a little bit bigger and we had a new organization where we were seeing that although we're not that big, but because we're an agency, there were some silos between the different departments of engineering, design, and project management, and even other departments. So the goal for this organization was really to bring all of us, integrate all the departments a lot more. So that's the department that I lead, which includes our engineering, project management, and design resources. And I now also see myself as a partner to the other departments like finance, revenue, and other departments for the business so that I can really stay integrated and empathetic for what everyone's needs are and see how can we bring all of that together and grow in a way that really brings everyone into the process and respects how people want to work. So I really believe in hearing the voices of everyone on the team. It doesn't matter how new you are or what your level is. I believe everyone has a very strong voice that they can contribute to help us all get better together.
That's so cool because I think what's keeping design from maturing is like a sophisticated business unit. It was actually, I was interviewing someone else, Brian Mortensen, for this season. He's currently my manager, but we go back and we talked about sometimes how stubborn designers can get. They just feel like all the drama needs to be about them and where they fit in an organization. And the insight that I got from that conversation was that I don't think designers realize that they're a stakeholder too. Like you need to act. We talk about everyone else's stakeholders, like the others, and we are stakeholders to other people. Right. And so for example, you know, a homie, our CPO, he's a former designer, former director of design at Redfin, worked on the Amazon Go stores, like really prolific career. He goes into product management and then like an executive role,
but he doesn't act like a lot of product managers or operations type people that like to manage businesses or study business or have an MBA. He has this designer lens to managing the product organization. And you could tell how his time as a designer influences his management style. I'd be curious to see like how your time as a designer has influenced your management style and your decisions while managing a bunch of different disciplines.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's actually one comment that I heard from another operations leader was that it's interesting to see someone coming from a different, this design background going into operations. Obviously, there's a lot of strong design operations leaders out there that I learned from, but from someone who didn't have that design background, for them, they also thought it was very interesting. I think there, it just shows how much designers have to offer. And before, coming from the IC product point of view, you bring that to the stakeholders you design for or the clients you design for by showing a different way of thinking through the design process. You're asking the questions that stakeholders didn't necessarily consider, things that really allow people to take a step back and understand what's important or what insights do we actually have to get from our users. So with that same lens, just like how product designers bring that value and different way of more empathetic thinking to their stakeholders, when you get into a leadership role, you are doing the same thing, but instead of the product stakeholders, it's your cross-functional partners or the executive team members or others who you're doing that for. So what I've really found valuable is how design leaders use facilitative skills to bring people together who may, you know, have differing thoughts, or to give more context to a problem they may be seeing, where they may just be seeing the surface of it, but they don't actually see all the underlying systemic issues for why something may be happening. And I think designers naturally are very good at bringing all of that context into mind for others. And in a design leadership role, they can really strongly advocate for their team and even their partners, because they're being empathetic and seeing these underlying things that may be happening, because you may be mapping it out in like a journey, right? Like just like how you map out a journey for a user for a product, you can do something similar for a process that you are trying to improve in-house. One of the things that we did recently was we were taking a look at, you know, we're trying to close projects better, but we also recognize that there's probably a lot of things. And when I say close, I basically deliver a project better at the very end. So although it's something that happens at the very end, there are a lot of things upstream that could also impact how smoothly it closes, right? Did we start on the right foot, or were roles clearly defined, responsibilities defined as well? So all of those things along the whole journey of the project can contribute to if a project delivers well at the end or not. And so that's something that I helped to facilitate, was to do that retrospective and ideation session with the team to really understand all the things that were happening, to get a real sense of what's really the problem or what's really the opportunities there. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. Man, I quote J.B. Chakowsky like a ton on this podcast, but he just has he's writing a book with a bunch of like really good like sayings, but he's a really great management thinker. And he said, I think in his like test manuscripts, he's testing little quotes on LinkedIn, I'm guessing for his book. And one of them was like, design is facilitation. And so when we were actually like chatting, you know, messaging back and forth in preparation for this, you also used similar language, which when I hear two people say something in the similar language, I'm like, oh, I think we're on to like a very true principle here. And you called using design to lead a company, that equals facilitative leadership. And I think what designers like superpower is when they go into operations role is like being very comfortable with facilitation, having these facilitation skills to rally people around like a common objective and help them like think abductively and creatively towards what historically have been seen as just mundane business stuff.
Yeah. And this is, it's definitely, I love the concept of facilitative leadership. And I first learned more about this through another prominent design leader, Alyssa Briggs, who she led her team through two acquisitions. So there were huge shifts to their company. And so really, and this is why I find it so valuable, is that you're giving the power back to the people to help bring them in and feel, get buy-in into whatever process you want to build together. And it's also very humble, right? It's acknowledging that you're not the smartest person in the room, just like how designers wouldn't want to make assumptions about the users and just design from that. So you're going in with that humility and goal of bringing people together. And oftentimes when we see problems, I feel, in other companies, it's when people are not being brought into the process or they're being, their voices being left out. And that creates a lot of friction. And so that's why I feel facilitative design led by designers or anyone who practices this type of leadership can be so powerful. And I think motivating for the team too, because ultimately everyone wants to feel like they have a voice, that they can make an impact on the world somehow, whether it's with your immediate team or your clients or whatever it is. I think it's very empowering. And that's something that we really value at Impeccable.
So what do you think like your deliverable is as a manager? Because now you're not designing screens or like specs for engineers. Like, what do you, if you like, you look back or like you moved to a different company and you were like, okay, this is my portfolio, this is what I did. What do you think like your deliverables are now that you could point to?
I think it's a very interesting, because with designers, we're very used to seeing design portfolios where you have a case study for this specific project and this product and things like that. I think with managers and other leadership roles, it's seeing more around how the culture is developed at a company. What are some activities that you did? How did you bring people together? How, and then from the operations point of view, it's maybe adding some metrics to that by pulling people together, by improving the operations this way, because we were able to get rid of other pain points through the process, the design process or project process, we were able to deliver faster or like 30% faster, whatever that number is. I think that becomes your case study where you have maybe an operational inefficiency, or maybe you're growing the team from one person to five or whatever that is. So it's definitely interesting, and it's definitely a good story and a learning experience for designers. I know there are designers that out there who they may just be the one designer at their company and they're not sure, like, what role do I play? Am I just a designer, but then I'm the only one, so I'm also involved in these business decisions. Is that not design or is that design? And so I used to feel that way when I was in more involved in these types of conversations, that now my time is taken away from design. You know, is that a good or bad? But it's a good learning experience. And what I really value is the experience of creating an environment that can help other designers and other team members do the best work that they can, which is really what operations is there to do. So making things more efficient or making people happier. So you could track people's happiness levels too, to see if the changes have improved morale, things like that. That's kind of how I see it. And I'm sure other operations leaders also see it too.
Yeah, like I've noticed like a big metric for operations leaders is like employee churn. It's, oh, if churn goes down, if people aren't like turning over every couple of years, then that's like a good indicator that they're happy in their job. And
yeah,
I could totally see that being like a big management thing. Like you mentioned like the solo designer, and like by necessity, a lot of like designers that are by themselves, maybe in an organization that has a ton of engineers on staff, but there just is one designer. There's no possible way to like design for every initiative. And so they're spending their time a lot more in meetings and conversations. And I've definitely seen, like, I've had that question go through my mind of, oh, is this still design? I'm like, I was talking to a coworker one time at one of my, a couple gigs ago, And we had 20 designers on the team, but it was a bigger org. And he was saying, like, it's too bad that as designers, like, we're spending so much time in meetings and we're like not spending as much time in sketch. Shouldn't we be spending more time designing? And I think he was thinking that same question. And I'm like, I don't think so. But now I'm of the opinion that is like part of the job description. If you do your job well, 20% of your time should be in like design software. Like you should, because the rest of the time you're working out user experience, information architecture, stakeholders, requirements, like that, the solutions like baked by the time you're jumping into the design software. So like, what can you tell that person that's listening that feels like they're overwhelmed and surprised by how much soft skill work is required to be in like this career? What would you tell them to let them know that, no, you're still a designer, like, mm-hmm. relax. Yeah.
No, I totally understand, because I went through the same exact journey, same reflections. And that's why more recently, when really reflecting on what do I really value in life, not even as a designer, but what really motivates me. For me, my values really are being able to mentor others, being able to really connect with other people, and be able to create a structure, because again, people can't do their best work if the environment that they're in isn't setting them up for success. How can we improve the structure so that people can be better designers? So really leaning into those values, it made me realize over the years that I actually love doing this operational work, because I love seeing other people grow. I love seeing people have trust put into them to do something beyond what they may have thought they could do, because I feel like the same opportunities have been given to me over the years to be able to grow into these different roles. And my passion is to try to give other people that opportunity to also shine as well. So for other designers out there who are thinking about, what do I really, I would say, maybe lean into, reflect a little bit on what's important to you too. Are you excited about more of the product strategy and getting in there and doing the work there? Or are you actually enjoying these conversations that you're having with stakeholders about how to work better together and things like that? If you enjoy it, that's okay, because eventually in the growth path, as you get higher up, you do have to play a higher level role and more of an influential role as well. So you would have to be talking to more people, sharing, evangelizing the design. So there is a lot of that soft skill involved anyway. So it is a growth path if you want to continue down that path. Or if you really love doing product design and you just really want to get better at that, honing your craft, that's something that you could also focus on. But if you're in that point right now where you're half in, half out, it's okay. You're in the right place. It's normal. And it's a way for you to reflect on what you really value in your own role. So
for you,
hopefully that helps.
Yeah, no, that's a really good answer. So for you, like when you felt this duality, like how long were you in that slump until you embraced your self-aware thoughts and went all in on operations? Like how long was that? Because we say it's normal, but we sometimes don't put like a time frame. Like how long are we talking? Like a couple of years of thinking, do I want to be an operations person? Do I want to turn, for me, it's do I want to go into product management for a little bit? It's scary because you can't really project like how your career will go if you pivot.
Yeah, for me, I'm fortunate. I was fortunate in that because I worked at an agency at Impeccable, naturally, just like how at an agency, you have a lot of different projects you may be juggling. That was how I was able to try different things out. So while I was like, when I became a manager, I was able to try out management and do that, but I still had one project that I would lead directly. So I was fortunate in that I was able to kind of be in these two worlds. Although I think it's not just unique to Impeccable that designers would have an opportunity to be in both worlds at the same time. And I think that's a good time to assess like what do you enjoy while taking these two journeys? And it's totally okay to explore. I think that naturally happens to people where you don't really know what management is like until you try. And there are also designers who try it and then they decide that they don't really want to do that. They want to come out, but it's one of those things where you never know until you try. What our current design team lead, she's an amazing designer, and she didn't necessarily think about going into doing some management initially, but she's a great manager. I would say she really enjoys her role. I don't want to put her words in her mouth, but it's one of those things where you don't know until you try. And if you have people around you who support you and believe in you, that's a good thing too, because you're in a safe space too. Try a different skill. That said, once you have tried both worlds, for me, it was a few years and I just slowly eased more into the management role. So as I grew, I would naturally have less time. So maybe at first I had two projects I was also running and then it was one. And then now I'm just overseeing the team. So in order to really devote my full attention to the team, then I'm not taking on other work. But so it definitely can take years, but I would say it doesn't have to be a slump. And I would encourage people who feel like they are in, maybe talk to your managers about what you're really interested in learning more about and just see what are some other projects or things that you can take on so that you can hone that. So if you're curious about the management track, it could be becoming a mentor to other designers. So that being a mentor is a great way to practice some of those managerial skills without actually going into management with all the bells and whistles that you would do, but it's a great way to practice your communication skills, listening, even how to develop others. So yeah, I would definitely encourage people to just try to explore what really is pulling where you're getting pulled.
Yeah. And like a career in design doesn't always mean like the actual craft of designing, you know, that so it could be supporting designers. Or it could just being really good at craft and being a principal, which is actually, I've looked at it. Like once I finally got good at the craft and I was able to turn things over pretty fast and high quality, I'm like, this is pretty nice. My calendar is really open. I just get to do the fun part of design. Like I have a good product or project manager that's like giving me like good ideas, thought out rationale. But at the same time, it's like for me, but it was like practicing that like mindfulness, like trying to become self-aware of what excites me the most. And I feel like inevitably I'm going to have to go into a management track because I do get excited helping other people win for selfish reasons. I think we have to acknowledge the selfish reasons. Oh, like I asked them a thoughtful question. They changed their behavior. They won. Oh, cool. I contributed. I think that's like the part of coach. That's just, you like watching people succeed and you like the leverage it gives you, right? Because then it's these like special, like these like moments where it really is just like a sentence or two in a conversation where it flips a switch in their brain and they perform better. And I realize I like that more, but at the same time, it's right. because craft's super fun, but even the best designs get refactored every couple of years. And then like, there goes your thumbprint. So you're a big practitioner of like mindfulness and meditation. Like what are some practices or what are some like processes that you introduce to like your direct reports to help them understand like what career path they have?
Yeah, what really helped me over the years and the reason why I'm such a big proponent of building mindful practices and habits is because with a lot of designers, it can be very challenging, especially the environments can be different, right? Depending on who designed reports into or whatever that is. Every company is also different. The design maturity and culture is different. So oftentimes, whether it's the environment or if designers are in new roles, it can be very challenging and it can feel overwhelming. And I definitely felt that way. I feel that I've grown somewhat quickly over the years. And a lot of times I felt like I was jumping into boots that were way too big for me. And you see a lot of activity on like social media of what you should be doing. And you always like, it can be easy to feel like, oh, you're not doing enough or whatever that is. So for me, why mindful practices has been really helpful for me is it helps me stay grounded to what's actually important to me. So if I start to feel like I'm comparing against all these other things, it's a way for me to think, oh, okay, why am I comparing that way? Actually, this is what's important. So this is actually the path that I can focus on. So for other designers who are thinking about their growth path, that could be a way to focus on what's really important to them. Another thing too is also being mindful helps you create space in your life for yourself and to introspect. Also for designers who are thinking about where they want their path to lead, it's just really great to create that space. So you just have that extra level of awareness as you're doing things. So going back to your earlier case of if you're not in two worlds and you're not sure where to go, then maybe building an intention that week to think, all right, I've been really struggling with which path I should go this week. My intention is to just notice how I feel doing these different things. So it could be something like that, just to start building in that extra step of awareness so you can start to understand, okay, I really notice I love to mentor others. I love the feeling I get when others grow. And this is what I love doing. So I think that could be a way to use mindful practices and also just give yourself more grace as you're learning. I'm still learning. That learning will never be finished. No one's perfect. Part of mindful practice is just to be content with also where you are and not to put extra pressure that you already probably have from everything else that you have going on.
So what's the difference between like contentment and entertain me here, because you mentioned contentment. Actually, yeah. Let's start out like for you, what's your definition of like contentment? Because I like the word content because it's like an acceptance of where you're at in life. Like, how do you define content? That's my definition, but like, where do you see it?
Absolutely. I think as you get into meditation practices, there are often lessons that you learn about being content as a way. I think it's part of it is to let go of the things that actually don't matter. You may feel urgency or stress around something that actually doesn't have anything to do with where you're trying to focus. So having contentness around that and letting go of those things. And then on the other side of that, it's also letting go of the urgency, I would say. I think a lot of people, especially like with businesses that are growing, people just have an urgency. We have to go fast. And it always feels like everyone's just constantly juggling a million things at once and you have to get it all done. And that in itself, like just feeling like you have to get it all done, it adds an extra layer of stress. And so part of letting go of that urgency, I see it as there's a contentness around we're on a path forward. I can let go of the urgency around it and just enjoy the process a little bit more. So being content with the fact that you're going into this unknown space, you're growing, hopefully it'll be a good path, but you're on this path and maybe it'll just let you enjoy it a little bit more versus just having that stress. Oh, I have to grow like this. So that's how I see it.
Yeah. I like what you said about enjoying the process. I think there's one thing I had to get over was trying to progress in my career super fast in the form of titles or in just learning to be like, no, I should get better at this first. I think I had the opportunity to go, oh, is Caden like ready to go group design manager? And I'm like, that's nice, but I'm not a senior designer yet. Make me a senior first. Give me a few years of actually getting experience. Cause like Caden, like a year or two ago would be like, oh, heck yeah. That looked really good on my resume because of the sense of urgency that like I need to be accomplishing things on a consistent cadence. But Michael Tinglin, who I interviewed a couple weeks ago, he like champions the value of like non-linear careers where you're jumping from management to IC. And if you're really going to be working most of your life, what happens if you do get that VP role at 30? Mm-hmm. then what? It's almost like a trap because you don't get to be like, oh, maybe I want to go back to a senior IC role, or, and I'll probably be working into my 50s. So maybe that's not the metric I should be looking at. And so now it's just more of, oh, I just want to be like consistently doing interesting work. And like, I want the luxury of being able to always have an interesting job, not having to settle. But in order to do that, it's, you have to have this contentment with the process of knowing who you are, what kind of work you value, and just letting go of the time it's going to take to get there.
Yeah, I think you make a very good point. It's contentness with your values, right? So it's not, you don't want to confuse contentness with being lackadaisical or settling for something. Sometimes contentness can have a negative association, but real here, it's really, yeah, you're content because you have a stronger understanding of your values, what's important to you at the time. And I think in the fast-paced world of tech and software, there's always people jumping ship because you see everyone else doing that, right? Oh, you have to like jump from this brand name company to that brand name company. But if you don't really understand what's important to you, you could be doing that, but really fulfilling what is really important for you personally. I think it's really important to connect that contentness with values. And that's how my career path has developed in this way too, where in the past, even if I thought about, would I want to work at this other company or that? But in the end, I thought about what's really important to me, which is learning, growing, being able to try out roles that maybe I wouldn't be able to try if I went to another company. So that's what really led me and allowed me to decide on what path I want to go with.
Yeah, this is like a light bulb moment for me, because I think there's also this like sense of guilt that you're not like being content means like, oh, I'm not being ambitious enough. Oh, right. I'm not trying to make more money. I'm never going to be rich because I'm content. And so I'm content with what I value and like what I, yeah. And if you just accept like what you value, like you don't have to like fit this mold. It also means you don't have to impose a mold on someone else. Like you could be content. You could be content that someone is also content. Like, so it's actually a really cheesy story, but I was just in Moab, Utah, probably like one of the best like outdoor places in the world. And we were rafting the Colorado and we had this river guide who's like in his 20s, like total granola type person. Oh, like I live in my van and blah, blah, blah. And I think like in the past, I would have been like, oh, he's not ambitious enough. And I'd like compare myself to him. But now I think I've just gotten to the point where I'm like, oh, if he's content, like if this is what winning is for him, good for him. As long as he like doesn't complain that he's just, wow, like I wish I had more money. It's like, stop being a river guide. But I'm like, oh, this guy looks really content. I respect that. And then it makes me like reflect on, oh, doing what I'm doing for the right reasons. And mm-hmm. I really love what I do. And I wouldn't say that I'm not devoid of like ambition or anything, but I'm like, oh, I could just enjoy life on the go. And then I can be more thoughtful about career moves as well. Like I don't have to follow tactics like, oh, move every 2 years, or because like for you, you're like, I remember talking with you. You're like, oh, I had this opportunity to go to this other company. They paid way better. It would have been a good mm-hmm. career move on paper, but you chose to stay at Impeccable. Like you seem like a person that's really content with your values because you're at this company that like has very strong values. I've talked with Peck, like he's a very awesome leader. Like how did you make that decision to stay at a company for so long when that's like totally not status quo in the tech industry? Right. Like how did you still progress your career staying at the same place?
Yeah.
That's admirable.
I think it's interesting, right? Because I think the status quo right now is just to jump every so often, because that's how you have to, it's almost like you have to negotiate. If you want a higher salary or something, you jump ship to get what you want. You can also find similar types of opportunities if you look within your own company. And I won't say this is not maybe for every situation, but maybe what people don't talk about enough is that if you stay at the same company, you also have opportunities. It's not just what's greener on the other side. And so for me, when that point did come up, And I did receive another offer. What I did was I looked into the next year. What would I be learning at the end of next year if I were to go on one path or the other? And what I found in that reflection, well, all the things that I would be able to learn at Impeccable were just so much more valuable to me as a person that it just wasn't even a question, even if it was a higher salary, because at Impeccable, I would be able to, like the things I mentioned earlier, I'd be able to get my hands on a lot more different projects. I'd be able to have more of a leadership role. I'd be able to just grow a lot more than I felt that I would have if I were to just follow the money, I guess, as you could say, to the other company. And it's been that way ever since. And for me, it's from that time, I've been able to grow in my role. And then later on, because it's a small company, actually, then I was able to create the opportunities for myself and, you know, what I wanted to learn. So for people at other small companies, I think if you understand that actually you have a voice, you can actually create opportunities for yourself in that company. You should definitely advocate for it, because if it also aligns with the business, you want to improve the design process, that can also make business impact. So it can actually be a very win-win situation for you and the company. So you would be able to maybe take on harder challenges that you didn't think about or wasn't assigned to you directly, or maybe lead an initiative that will improve something for the company. So that's good for you because you're taking a leadership role in that direction. And then for the company, it's also a win because now their product or a team is now better as a result of your initiative and your leadership. A couple of years ago, when I was really growing into my management role, I actually got a lot of learning from, you know, that conference that I went to or that design book that I mentioned, and realized, oh, wow, I didn't necessarily get the direction that I have to build out the team a certain way. I actually read those things and learned and realized, okay, this is actually what we have to do at Impeccable. So then I built out the roadmap for our team with what I had learned. So it's learning what's out there, realizing what role you can play for the company, and really letting yourself go into that. So I think for other designers, that whether it's a small team in a big company or whatever it is, see if you have those types of opportunities. And if not, if you haven't seen them yet, don't be afraid to ask, and you may be surprised to what you can actually do and grow into.
Yeah. All you need to do is ask, and there's plenty of opportunities to just design your next job in a company.
Absolutely.
It's so true. Yeah. But it all comes with actually speaking up. And if you feel like you have something to say it humbly, non-judgmentally, a little candor goes a long way in career growth. And hopefully where I'm at, like, that homie could be my Impeccable because I just believe in what they're doing and stuff. But I think also it's just, you just get to a point financially where like more money's nice. You're like, oh, cool. But you really do have like enough for what you need to do. And now you can focus on fulfillment, which is a really great place to hit in your career. Where you get, mm-hmm. And then also I think one of the unspoken benefits of like long-term stuff, like you might be doing a trade-off and like quick compensation jumps might be more gradual, but I think you notice this. And what I've noticed is that as you become more familiar with kind of like the upper stakeholders and the founder, if it's a smaller company, like you get big jumps in flexibility too. There's just so much more trust in you because they know you, they know your track record, and you kind of you get like a more flexible life as well. It sounds bad, but to get away with stuff, if you have an emergency and you need to leave, like they're not going to treat you like some HR resource. They're going to be like, right. Oh, like you had this big life event. Good for you. Go ahead. That's a big Absolutely. Thing to look for in a company, at least for me.
Yeah.
Flexibility is nice.
I think culture is really important. And I think the other thing too, when you step into more of a leadership or management role, is that you also have the power to create and foster the culture that you really want. So if you become a manager and flexibility is really valuable to you, then you can also set the tone for your team that, hey, I trust that we're all adults here. I trust you get the job done. You can definitely take the afternoon, get that extra bike ride in. I'm not going to micromanage that. Yeah, when you do step into these roles, and you don't even have to be in these roles, anyone can set that example. But building the culture is also one aspect that I really enjoy. And I try hard to keep that in mind. That's why I love connecting with people on the team often, just so I can really hear from them how they're feeling and what they feel we can change and how we can improve together.
Janet, this has been a really great conversation. Like, we went deep on this one, but I say that in every episode. I think it's just the way we go here, and the way of product design. But I want to try out a new question with you just to help wrap this up. You've mentioned Alyssa Briggs. You've talked about Peck. Off the top of your head, like, who are some like design and product leaders that you really admire?
Yeah, absolutely. Alyssa Briggs, I've mentioned before, but she really embodies the values of some similar values, I feel. That's why I really connect. And actually, I'm fortunate to have her as my leadership coach today. Another shout out for people who are in growing positions. If you're a new manager, I definitely recommend asking your manager if you can get sounding board coaching, because when I was in a new manager role, sounding board was a help for me. I don't know where I would have been without sounding board and just having that person in my corner. I would give a shout out to my coaches, my leadership coaches who have helped me on my journey. I also really admire Marissa Louie. She also has, you know, we spoke a little bit earlier about the deliverables of a design leader. She has a great portfolio where she includes a little bit of all of those from the product management leadership side. She has all of that there. So great resource for people. I learned a lot again from Peter Merholtz, who came from an agency world, later now consults and helps build out design organizations at other companies. His book that he co-authored, Org Design for Design Orgs, again, huge help. Yeah. And again, Chris Liu, I just want to give a shout out to Chris. We were able to connect through him through the office hours. And it's when I was a young designer, I listened to his podcast a lot and really appreciated that. He inspired me to open up my office hours time too. Those are just some other people that I want to give shouts out to. Last one, we have an amazing non-designer, but this is why people should make best friends with all the people, partners around them. But our chief people officer, Christina, has been amazing. And I've learned a lot from her about just compassionate leadership. So those are just a few heroes.
That's an awesome list. Yeah, I will concur that Chris Liu is the man. It's really fun to get into the podcast and kind of not only just get to know someone, but establish like a friendship too. And actually just meet. It's just nice to have friends not in Utah, like in California, Dallas, Europe, New York. Like, it's cool to have a nice spread geographically, which I think COVID really helped with. Hey, Janet, is there anything else that you feel like you need to say or want to share before we sign?
Just that I think the last thing I would say is I really believe, I think we talked a little bit earlier about design, like designers following different paths. Every designer comes from different paths. I just always encourage designers to lean into the path that you've been on, because I always think that's the and to you as a designer. So for me, it was the experience from my father's company that taught me more about the business side that brought me to where I am. So for other designers who feel like, oh, I didn't follow the traditional path, don't feel bad and just lean into that as your inner power. So you got it.
Yeah. You are the sum of your experiences, and lean into what cards you have dealt to inform your personal work style. Love it. Janet, thank you again for coming on the show. You have a good one.
Thank you. You too. Great talking to you.
Thanks again for listening to The Way of Product Design. One quick favor, if you enjoyed this episode, please share it with your network, your friends, and hit that subscribe button on the show wherever you're listening to it. Thanks again for listening to the show, and I'm really excited to bring more awesome interviews and content your way. So keep listening, you won't be disappointed.